Then I've got another one. Okay, all right. I just found out we have an old radio man here. That's right. I'm Ann Eller right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. It is time for Meet Me at the Diner. Today we are going to be talking about the South Carolina State Museum right here from Columbia. They made the drive up here, and that is terrific. And I have Tut Underwood. How are you doing today, Tut?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
So you're an old radio man.
I am. I worked in radio in Alabama and in South Carolina, and I still do a lot of talk shows and things around the area, just let people know what's going on at the South Carolina State Museum. So I kind of keep a hand in it and know a lot of broadcasters and that kind of thing.
Well, that's terrific. That's terrific.
Right.
I'm Ashley Byrd. I bet you know Ashley Byrd.
I sure do. She's a great lady.
That's right. That's right. We had dinner with Ashley and Scott about two weeks ago.
Is
right?
that right?
Yep.
Great.
Absolutely.
Did you go to Columbia or did they come over here?
Yeah, they
you?
Came over here. That's
right.
Yeah. And we also, I turn in a lot of our stuff to South Carolina News, and they carry it. In fact, right now they're carrying an interview I did with Jim DeMint.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
so how great. About that? But, Tut, you are, what is your role there at the...
I'm the Director of Public Information and Marketing, and so I do, you know, advertising and PR and media relations and all kinds of other writing, editing-type functions.
It sounds like whatever they need you to do.
Right. A lot of people are that way, actually, with our size staff. We have a lot of people doing multiple hats, but it's a great place. Been there quite a while and really enjoy it. It's an exciting place, and you always learn something new and meet fascinating people. And so it's a place that I'm thrilled to represent, and it's easy to do because it's a great, great place.
That's excellent. Now, I also have Tom Flavely, is that right?
No, Falvey.
Falvey. Okay, I'm sorry, Tom.
That's all right. I was having trouble with Ann, so you know.
Complex. Tom and Tut.
That's right.
Well, Tom, so you're from Massachusetts.
That's right. I was born in Massachusetts and have been, I guess I can't say it, but a darn Yankee for a long, long time. I really love the South and love Columbia especially.
Well, I'm from Maine originally.
Are you?
That's right. And I went to school, actually, in Massachusetts. I went to Northfield, which is in the western part of the state.
I know Northfield, Mount Hermon.
Yes, right.
Right.
Well, Northfield is, I guess, no more. Mount Hermon is the remaining school there,
yeah.
is what I understand.
I know it well.
Yeah. So that's where I went to school. So what do you do, Tom?
I'm the director of education, so I'm responsible for the content of the education programs we do, as well as I'm in charge of the collections of staff, so the curators, the registrars, the folks who take care of our all of our objects and items that come in, and that involves some of the exhibitry as well. So other than that, working on a pretty big expansion, but I imagine we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Absolutely. I was amazed to see how big it's going to be. I was amazed to find out that the museum is the largest in the Southeast.
That's right. Unless you count a battleship or a aircraft carrier or something, maybe they would be bigger. But excuse me. But we are located in a former textile mill in downtown Columbia, and it's got four floors. It's got plenty of space, high ceilings and everything, wood floors, brick. It's just a very traditional building that has just made a perfect home, rehabilitated as the South Carolina State Museum, because after all, the textile industry was such a large part of South Carolina's social and financial history, you know.
Absolutely.
So economic history. So it's been a good marriage of the museum and the mill.
Now, what company owned the mill down there? You know, we had Greenwood Mills right here in Greenwood.
Right. It was originally called the Columbia Mill when it opened in 1894, but by the time it closed, it was owned by... the name is escaping me at the moment, but it'll pop up in a minute, I know.
Okay.
Because when you're not thinking about something, then it comes to you.
Exactly.
But if you had asked me that off the air, I probably could have remembered it. But anyway,
Mount Vernon Mills. There
and,
you go.
So they closed it in 1981. And as a matter of fact, when the museum, of course, is a very young museum. We only opened in 1988, but the
Correct.
Museum was established in 1973. And so for 15 years, they spent gathering materials, gathering artifacts, looking for a place designed.
But there wasn't a museum before.
That's right. The state did not have a museum. It was one of the last states, last six or seven states, not to have a state museum. So when they found this building, it was a real godsend, and it worked perfectly as that. And because in 1981, Mount Vernon said, we're closing the mill because of foreign competition
sure.
and all. And so Roger Stroop, who was our director of, I mean, our our curator of history at the time went over and looked at this building, and he brought it to the attention of the authorities, and they went and sought the help of Governor Riley, and with his help, they talked Mount Vernon into donating the building to the state for use as the state museum. And it's just been a great building to be in. It's a wonderful home.
That's a phenomenal story.
It's really
good. I mean, really, neat. To
yeah.
be able to have that type. Now, do you have any setup for the old mill? Do you have anything?
We have an exhibit, yes, of textile workers and mill work. We have some old machines, mm-hmm. textile machines in there. Mill workers, that's on the science and technology floor. And then on the history floor, we have a room, like a bedroom, from a typical mill worker's house. And also a reproduction of the Union County Buffalo Mill. And it's very, very accurate, because we used to have a lady who worked here who grew up in that village. And she said, that's where my uncle and aunt lived, and that's where my grandmother lived, and that's where we went to church. So she really authenticated its authenticity. And so it's a great, great exhibit. And there's so many things, though, to see and do in there. As a matter of fact, speaking of the mill, another unusual thing about it is, it was the first textile mill in the world to be totally powered by electricity. So our building is actually our biggest artifact, and we are inside our biggest artifact.
How about that? That's very cool.
Yeah.
You know, here in Greenwood, of course, we had Greenwood mills. I think we have one, maybe two mills still working. But we had mill villages, and those houses
sure.
were so well built and everything. And today, people have been able to buy them and fix them up and everything. They're terrific.
Well, the mill village for ours is still across the river in West Columbia, and they've been sold to private individuals, and still there. Yeah.
Still there. So that's a very interesting part of what goes on down there at the museum. But, you know, we have so many things to talk about. We're going to have to hear a word from our sponsors. But, Tom, how about just go through what a couple of the big exhibits going on right now are?
Yeah, we have one coming up that is an abstract art show, 1949 to present, which looks at abstract art in South Carolina. Wonderful, amazing, over 40 pieces of art, 40 artists actually represented. The really big one right now for us is Body Worlds Vital, which is one of the Body Worlds exhibits, and it is just doing amazingly well. Just people coming, piling through the doors, and we have only a couple more months left. So if you want to come to that, we want people to come soon.
Well, you know, that is amazing here in South Carolina. We've got those naked bodies.
we tend to, people say, oh, look, he's nude. And like, well, that's anatomy, not, you know, nakedness.
And really, they don't have any skin on them, so
right.
I don't know if you call that nude or not. You know?
But it really, and you know, when we started early in the process of making sure that people understood what this was and what we were doing, and the reaction was so positive. And we've had almost all positive reaction across the board. So it's been a great experience so far.
Well, then we don't need to talk about any of the positive. We need to talk about some of the negative.
We won't be able to fill an hour with that, I'm sure. Not even a minute.
All right. Well, you know, there's always somebody, isn't there, that has
right.
something to say. But interesting exhibit. And, of course, there's been a lot of news coverage on that. So we'll be talking about that. You also have some other interesting exhibits. But right now, we do want to hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we are talking with Tom and Tut right here on WLMA. Hey, if you've got a question for them, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be back after this word.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Wednesday, happy day.
Right. We're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking with Tut Underwood and Tom.
Falvey.
Falvey, Tom Falvey, that's right. And, yes, I'm Ann Eller. And, Tom, how did you end up at the museum?
Well, I worked at the Cape Fear Museum, which is in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I was there as a science educator in the State Museum. I was advertising for someone to do science education in such a big venue. I really needed to make a move and to kind of spread my wings. So I've been there since 2000 and have kind of just moved up through the ranks doing all sorts of different things.
Well, that's great. Now, when you were growing up in South Hadley, Massachusetts, what did you want to do when you grew up?
I wanted to be a jazz trumpet player.
A jazz trumpet player. So, do you play the trumpet?
I do.
Yes?
I went to college to be a trumpet player and then realized that only people who have a lot of talent and are truly dedicated get to be on a big stage somewhere.
So you belong to a group, though, down there in Columbia? I mean, there's so many
groups.
I don't
anymore, no. We had a band in graduate school, and we played. I was in a ska band, which is a Jamaican form of kind of rhythm and blues, and so I did that. We played, you know, we toured. We did a couple CDs, but, you know, you can get away with a little talent and a little practice doing that.
Absolutely. Well, we have from right up here, Dr. Patton goes down to Columbia and plays down there in Columbia in Five Points. And also over there at Lander, he lives in, I think, Lexington. Garnier is he plays down there in Columbia. Has a band that plays jazz, big band music.
Oh, great.
Down
like
there.
That.
Absolutely, but he's a professor up here at Lander. So that's, I guess, why I asked that. And I have a question that's already come in before we get to talk about anything else. David Riley, are the museums in the state interconnected like the library system is through USC? Our museum could certainly use the help and might have items they could use. Well, Tom, that you've got an exhibit that's actually going to be working here, aren't you?
Yeah, we are interconnected, but not by a formal process. But most museums belong to what they call the South Carolina Federation of Museums. In fact, the conference is coming up in March, and that's in Georgetown. And the purpose of that organization, obviously, is to provide professional work across museums. And the State Museum has historically helped other museums around the state by offering consultations, so you can always call us and talk to maybe one of our fabricators or curators. And then we do loans throughout the state. So if someone needs an artifact to borrow for a museum, we do that. We have a traveling exhibits program, and the exhibits that we have travel all over the state. In fact, not even beyond. We've had them in New Mexico. We have one in Philadelphia right now, going to D.C. after that. So
that's big business.
Yeah,
it is big business.
And it really is, and they're very affordable. We make these extremely affordable for smaller museums, county museums, and libraries around the state so that all the different subjects, and I think we have over 20 traveling exhibits right now, and so that anyone can have access to these. And that way, minimal, if you have a small staff, you can put these up very easily.
Sure. In fact, right now we have a Black inventor exhibit going on right now at the museum here in Greenwood.
So, is it the Real McCoy? Is that what it's called?
The Real McCoy. I don't know if it's called the Real McCoy.
We had a similar exhibit called the Real McCoy several years ago when it was about Black inventors. You know, it was really neat.
Right. Well, we've got, I know they've got the peanut butter inventor and the all these things that were invented. So, they actually, in fact, we talked about this with Stacy the other day, what were we just talking about? The mills that they're working on that exhibit. And so that's going to be one that's coming together that is going to be traveling around after it visits here, right?
Right. The Self family actually gave us some money to develop an exhibit with our exhibit staff, and that will open in October at the museum here, and it's about the Greenwood Mills. So it's about mill villages and life in a mill village. And then after that, we will travel that around the state, so people will be able to rent that from our traveling exhibits program.
Well, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really neat. And we're just about to button one up and pack that one up. We have a Charleston earthquake exhibit. Last year was the 125th anniversary of the big quake in Charleston, and so we developed an exhibit for that, and that also will travel, and that starts, I think, in May. We'll travel that.
So lots of exciting things. But, you know, you have a lot of kids, I guess, coming down there for this body exhibit here. What can you tell us about that one, Tut?
Well, the Body Worlds exhibit, and Tom is the man on that a lot of times, but it has attracted a lot of kids because everybody needs to know what's inside of. The whole premise of Body Worlds Vital is to develop and encourage healthy lifestyles and healthy changes in your lifestyle. It shows you bodies that are in health, bodies that are in distress, and bodies that have declined, you know, or in disease. And not only full bodies, there are like 14 full bodies, but they're also individual organs and systems and things like this. So you can actually see, for example, a smoker's lung and see what smoking does to your lungs. As a matter of fact, this is the seventh version of the Body Worlds exhibits. There have been 6 previous ones that have been all around the world, and there 33 million people have seen these exhibits, and thousands of people, after seeing those blackened, charred smokers' lungs, have quit smoking. So the great thing about this thing is not only does it encourage healthy lifestyles, but it can and has saved lives by getting people to quit smoking, to get exercise, to eat better foods and things like that. So it's wonderful. And not only children need to see this in their school classes, but everybody. We've been really gratified to see families bringing kids of all ages to this exhibit. We have actually, out of caution, recommended it for 5th grade and up, but many families have brought smaller children, 2, 3, 4, 5-year-olds, and they are not put off by seeing these bodies at all. And that's been really gratifying to us.
Absolutely. That sounds that sounds very interesting. Now, how long is that exhibit going to actually be there?
Until April 15th. So 2 months from today, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So we hope everybody will come and enjoy it because it is great. It is one of our what we call blockbuster exhibits. It's a huge exhibit. It's real expensive to bring in and that kind of thing, and it's a bigger one. So there is an extra charge to this, but it is well worth it. Everybody has just raved about this exhibit. They think not only is it interesting, but it's important because of its health and life-saving qualities and possibilities. Everybody needs to know. You know, the basic thing is the more you know about what makes you tick, what goes on inside you, the better care you can take of yourself. And that's what this is encouraging.
Now, who actually started that exhibit, the original exhibit?
It was started by a German doctor named Günther von Hagens. He invented in 1977 the process of plastination, which Tom can tell you more about, but it preserves bodies so that he originally did it so they could be studied better in medical schools. But once that was successful, he said, this is important. Everybody needs to see this. And so he started a foundation where people can donate their bodies to science for education. And this is the only company, and there are several knockoff companies behind this. This is the only one because it is the first and original that has an actual foundation where people donate their bodies and will them to be shown so that they can help other people and educate them. And so it has just boomed since he invented this process in 1977.
Now, Tom, just out of curiosity, if people are donating their bodies, do they have a name plaque on them?
No, yeah.
Yes,
good one. Because a lot of people really want to know some personal information. I think people connect so much with looking at another individual, they want to know more.
Exactly, exactly.
And I think the arrangement is that privacy obviously is respected for all donors, so that we don't know anything about who they are. And it's almost a shame because
people really
are. And I think that's when you look at this exhibit, you know, people will stand there and say, that's your lung or that's your liver. And, you know, it's really neat because it's not your liver, you know, it's not my liver, but that's how strongly people associate with these things, with these bodies and with these organs.
Now, you said that a lot of 7th graders actually come to this. Well, 7th graders, they're at that kind of laughing and giggling stage. How do they perceive the whole thing?
Well, I know that teachers do a lot of advanced work and get these kids in the right frame of mind before they come. And we do have a packet online, a PDF that allows teachers to approach the subject with their students before they come, both scientifically, medically, and as well as kind of some of the giggle factor. And then I've heard a lot of teachers say, okay, now it's the time to start thinking. But what we've found is that when people get into the environment, which is a very quiet, dark environment with real beautiful lighting that students really settle down, and you still see a few pointing and giggling, but for the most part, people really are focused on the science and the rest of the experience.
Well, so, well, just about every 7th grader have been able to go to this exhibit?
I wonder. I know we have 15,000 signed up for the entire run of the exhibit, and the bulk of them are going to be coming in the next couple of months, so it's going to be, or at least about half of them, so
it's
going to be busy weekdays, but what's great is we're open late on Tuesday nights right now till 8. So if you come at 3, of course, all the students are gone, and it's a great time. You could come, and you can experience the museum until 8 o'clock at
and
night.
And Saturday till 6 as well.
Right, so we have extended hours, and that has been necessary to deal with some of the crowds we've had.
Absolutely. Well, Tut, real quick, what are the hours? And then we're going to have to hear South Carolina news.
Okay, the hours are Tuesday through Saturday, normal hours, Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5. But as Tom just said, on Tuesday, it's now 8 o'clock, and Saturday is now 6 o'clock. And Sunday's 1 to 5. So the only day we're closed is Monday. But we're open on Mondays during the summer between Memorial Day and Labor Day.
But if you want to get to see the exhibit, you need to do it before April 15th. Hey, we are right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to the State Museum right here. If you've got a question, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. News is up. We'll be back. Don't you go away.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday.
Oh, that's right. We're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Speaking of Sharp Facets Gallery, right now the price of gold has definitely gone up over what it was this morning, folks. Let's just get a quick check of that as we get ready to talk more about the State Museum down there. Sounds like we have a real treasure, and sometimes I don't think we appreciate what's in our backyard.
That's right. I always call the State Museum South Carolina's treasure house because that's what it is. We were started to house a lot of South Carolina's great treasures, which were slipping out to private collections and museums in other states, and that's why Dr. Robert Stevenson at USC in the early 1970s proposed a state museum, and why it was easy to sell to the legislature, because South Carolina, I like to say, has a richer history and heritage than most states because it was one of the original 13. So we have a very, very rich and diverse culture and heritage in this state, from, you know, prehistoric Indians, prehistoric animals, the beach, the fact that Columbia is called the area of the state geologically, is called the sand hills because you can go out and the soil is very sandy right under the grass. Well, that was because 100 million years ago, it was the beach.
Right.
That water came right up to where Columbia is now in the central part of the state, that whole slice there. So there's so much diversity. We've got mountains, we've got beaches, we've got midlands and plains and stuff, and a great history and culture. So it's an ideal place to delve into anything from fossils to Indians to early railroading. I mean, we've had such an impact on the history of this country, and it's a great thing to discover and learn from all the time.
Absolutely. But, you know, I think sometimes we don't think about that. I mean, last year I was at the Smithsonian,
mm-hmm.
you know, and did a nice tour from up there.
Right.
And you don't think of, wow, we have a great museum right here.
And a lot of people, especially me, called the State Museum, South Carolina State Museum, the Smithsonian of the South. As a matter of fact, recently, the readers of Southern Living Magazine chose the top three museums in the South, and they chose the Smithsonian, which is not really in the South, and although it is next to Virginia, I guess, the High Museum in Atlanta, and the High Museum of Art in Atlanta, and the South Carolina State Museum. So
that
it's pretty good company
impressive.
To be keeping. And you're right, people don't acknowledge or don't realize what's in their own backyard sometimes. You go to New York, you go to Washington, and you'd knock yourself out to see every museum and everything in town there is, say, all the tourist attractions and stuff. But you get back home and you go, oh, I can go there anytime. But they don't. How many New Yorkers have not been to the Statue of Liberty? I bet you 50% of the population hasn't.
Right.
And they don't think because they think, oh, I can go anytime. So they don't go. It's the same thing.
Well, I think sometimes you think of Charleston as a great place to go to get away, but
right.
you're not on your radar is Columbia.
Right. But yes. We've got not only the South Carolina State Museum, but the Riverbank Zoo, the South Carolina State House, which is a great attraction, the Columbia Museum of Art, and many other things, historic homes and things like this. So
sure.
Columbia really has a lot to offer as a tourist place. But, of course, Charleston and Myrtle Beach have the big names nationally. There's no question about
sure.
that.
Sure. Well, first, let's go through what the hours are. So if people are listening here, they're going to say, hey, I need to write this down mm-hmm. because it is important to visit our museum. Also, you have a website where people can go and look at the exhibits that are coming or what's happening.
That's right. All the information is at our website, which is easy. It's ourname.org, SouthCarolinaStateMuseum.org. Our hours are Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, although for the Body Worlds exhibit, Tuesday has been extended to 8 o'clock and Saturday to 6 o'clock. But Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are still 10 to 5, and then 1 to 5 on Sundays.
That's right. And now how much does it cost to go to the museum?
General admission is $7 for adults, $6 for seniors 62 and over, and $5 for kids 3 to 12. And then the Body Worlds exhibit is in addition to that. So I think it's $11 for adults, 9 for seniors, and 7 for kids, in addition to regular admission.
But that's still cheap.
It's still
cheap.
It is. Some people think that's expensive, but this thing is such an expensive exhibit. It really is. For what you get, it's still cheap. And there are bargains, too, because, for example, the first Sunday of every month is what we call Dollar Sunday. General admission is only $1 that day. So you can come, and for $1 plus $11 for $12, you can see an exhibit and save yourself $6.
This is an excellent opportunity that we have here. We had a question come in. Willie Marks, he says he's teaching actually at Northside now. He's listening to the show. And when he was at USC between 1970 and 74, McKissick actually had a working still set up in it. He was a guard there as a college job. He said there was lots of neat stuff in the back of McKissick in those days. Now, McKissick is actually, though, separate from the State Museum. Is that correct?
Yes, it's part of the University of South Carolina. As a matter of fact, it was the McKissick Library. It was the university's library at the head of the horseshoe in those days, and now it's a museum. As a matter of fact, I used to work in that building before I came to the State Museum when I was working for the University of South Carolina. But it wasn't a library when I was there, and Tom wasn't.
They have such a wonderful collection, and they have a wonderful museum studies program. So students are getting a master's in arts in public history, often end up focusing on museums and then going on. And several curators who've come through our place have had degrees, and we just got a call. Someone who wanted to be an intern this summer is volunteering her services to be a part of our team and to work through some of the traveling exhibit stuff. In fact, she might help with the Greenwood Mills piece, as far as I know.
But, you know, that's neat. Now, speaking of that, it takes a lot of work, doesn't it, Tom, to put together a traveling exhibit, and a lot of painstaking work, plus making it so it can travel.
Yeah, in fact, any of our exhibits take a lot of work, and we have such a great exhibit staff, The traveling exhibits we do are primarily two-dimensional pieces that hang on walls because many museums just don't have the space to do a lot of three-dimensional objects. And we want to make everything so it can fit in a van and it can be packed, and so that way we can make it affordable. But it takes a lot of research, takes a lot of graphic arts work to make it attractive to people, obviously a lot of good writing, and Tut does all of our editing, so make sure that folks can read it and it makes sense. So, so it's an involved process, and of course you want to make sure you cover all the sides of the story so you don't, you know, have a slanted view. So it takes a really objective curator and education staff to put it all together.
How many people work at the museum? Just out of curiosity.
23 or 24, which is a very small number.
I was going to say, that's not very many.
As a matter of fact, when we opened in 1988, we had 67 full-timers, and we thought that was barely adequate. We thought we needed 76. But with budget cuts and attrition through the years, we have been whittled down. And so we're doing what we once did with 67 people with 23 or 24. But
do you rollerblade throughout the place?
Sometimes it wouldn't be a bad idea, actually. But anyway, we've got a great staff of very talented, dedicated people, and they're making it work.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the exhibits that you do have down there is the Civil War, correct?
Yes, we've been expanding our Civil War gallery during this sesquicentennial period, and the focus there is to really expand the entire story. We had always had a Civil War area, but now we're taking over some space that had been storage, and we're going into that space with 6 new exhibits. And so, yeah, they focus on different parts of the Civil War.
Because we just had a question come in. Jim Johnson says, do you work with reenactors organizations?
Certainly, we do. We have periodic weekend programs and things like this, which we have a wonderful lady named Celeste Wazzola who puts these things on. And periodically, we do have events that involve the war and stuff. For example, every August, we have the Southeastern Toy Soldier Show, and collectors from all over the South and sometimes all over the country and even foreign countries have come to bring their collections and either show them or sell them or talk about them, and people can come and buy, sell, trade toy soldiers, and that includes, they call them in the trade, military miniatures, you know, but we know them as toy soldiers, you know.
Sounds better, military miniatures.
Yes, of course. Right. It doesn't sound like it was a kid's hobby.
Sounds like Napoleon.
Right. Right.
There you go.
Yeah, he was a military miniature, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very good. But these people come and from all over and show their collections. And then in addition to that, we have other activities around, such as on our front grounds, we often have reenactors doing encampments.
That's cool.
And they show what, like, soldiers from the Civil War or the Revolutionary War, what their lives were like. They have weapons and uniforms, and they have sometimes they have fire their muskets and have demonstrations of weapon loading and firing and stuff. And they have sometimes other time periods too, World War II or World War I or even Vietnam, for example. And they sometimes they'll have military vehicles like jeeps or ambulances or things like this. So it's a big day. And that happens, I think, usually about the second Saturday of August. And
nice hot time of the year.
Right.
Nice hot time of the year. I like how you do that, guys.
We actually have a reenactor who's coming in for our camp-ins. We do camp-ins for Girl Scouts, Cub Scouts, and even some private groups if they can get enough folks together. And we have someone who's coming in and doing reenactment of a Civil War soldier, so describing what life was like. And that's just one of the activities campers do during the evening on a Friday night.
Right. That's very cool. Now, you know, the biggest thing, though, I think, is getting that information out there, isn't it? So that people, I mean, I'm sure that it's very easy, shall we say, maybe in Columbia in that area, but how do people that want to know more about the museum get to be on the list to know?
Well, certainly, we're glad to be here and talk about it on radio stations, TV stations around the state when we can get out, and we send news releases to the media throughout the state. But if you're not getting them, let me know, because we'll put you on the list. You should be on the list. But certainly everybody in the state, or actually everybody in the world, can tune in to the website, SouthCarolinaStateMuseum.org, and keep up with all the latest activities and events and kind of thing.
Do you have an email list? I mean, do you send out?
We do. Yes. We do. We have a periodic email. Every month we send out an e-newsletter. And if you're a member of the Friends of the State Museum, which we should talk about too, they also have an email blast that they do once or twice a month to see what the latest activities and things are for the members. Because if you're a member, you get some special treats and things like this, some benefits to membership at the museum. And
including
so,
free general admission for the year. So.
Well, okay. All right, so membership has its benefits?
Absolutely. You want to talk
about the American Express card here? Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Membership has its benefits. Well, I tell you what, Andy, let's have a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the expansion, some of the benefits of the State Museum right here. If you've got a question, don't hesitate to call us, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day.
We have been able to corral the South Carolina State Museum, Tut Underwood, and Tom
Falvey,
right here with us here today. We've had a good time. Tom's actually been up here, I guess, several times. I've come up here for Marywood. Doing some shows or something?
Yeah, Marywood Elementary loves to have us come up and do a Starlab Planetarium show. It's a portable planetarium program that we do around the state. And, I think I've been twice to Marywood. I love it. It's great. And I love their lunchroom, too. I've had some pretty good lunches in there.
Isn't it amazing? I just got to say this. Isn't it amazing wherever we go, when you come back from something, what's the one thing people always ask? What'd you have to eat?
It's especially true in the South because the food's so good.
Absolutely. But, Tom, you're getting ready for a huge expansion down there. This is phenomenal, and I understand you already have it financed, even more impressive.
Yeah, this is a $23.5 million project. And speaking of planetariums, we'll have a permanent planetarium. It's a 55-foot digital dome system, which is just enormous. It's one of the biggest in the Southeast. I think the only bigger one is in Baton Rouge at 70 feet. So it's a huge dome, beautiful system. And that is going to be something that people can come to. Students will be able to come to that, and anybody. We're adding a 4D theater in our existing auditorium space. And so that's a theater that's full 3D on a giant screen, but also the fourth dimension, of course, is you get sprayed in the face, blasted, just like the museum has, talked about. We're adding an observatory with a vintage Alvin Clark telescope, the finest maker in the world of refracting telescopes. And so we'll be adding that, which will be linked to every classroom in the state of South Carolina. So students will be able to access that telescope and use the images in their classroom. And then as part of that, a new exhibit of telescopes, and we have one of the finest collections of especially American-made refractors in the world. We have the finest collection of 19th-century American-made refracting telescopes in the world.
Now, who would know that? I mean, that is isn't that phenomenal? When you consider all the big, and we talk about the Smithsonian, the High Museum and everything, and right here in South Carolina, awesome.
And we have more Alvin Clarks than anywhere. In fact, Tut loves this because when you talk about the Smithsonian and you compare their collection to ours, what's the number you like to use?
50 trillion. We have more than 50 trillion times the number of Alvin Clark telescopes than the Smithsonian because we have 13 and they have zero.
So you can pick a number.
Pick a number. And
but what's great on Alvin Clark?
Well, how come y'all have these?
Well, we have a donor who's
Bob Ariel.
He's a Columbia native. He's not the cartoonist Robert Ariel, but he owned an insurance company, had a partner in that business, and he just had this fascination with astronomy, recently donated a collection of texts to the Thomas Cooper Library, which is one of the world-class collections of astronomy texts, and he donated his entire collection of astronomical instruments to us, and that's why we have it. And this is truly an amazing exhibit. I mean, this area is going to be absolutely amazing for people over the world as a research tool, but also just to come in awe and look at these beautiful instruments.
And you were talking about Alvin Clark. Most people don't know who Alvin Clark was, but he was America's foremost telescope maker. Matter of fact, the world's probably, because his lenses were like Stradivarius violins. He was making them 150 years ago in Boston, Massachusetts, and nobody today is making anything that comes close to what he was making 150 years ago. So Alvin Clark is the standard of the world. And
when we talk about American exceptionalism, when you look back at things like this that have been done in our country, doesn't it just make you proud?
It is. It's great.
Fantastic. You know, a nearby story is in Due West at Erskine College, the Henry Fitts telescope that we have on exhibit was restored over a 13-year period by Bob Ariel. This telescope is the oldest American-made telescope in existence. It's at the South Carolina State Museum, and it was installed in 1849 at Erskine College right here in Due West, South Carolina. So, you know, there's some major history, too, in South Carolina with early astronomy. In fact, the University of South Carolina, when it was South Carolina College, bought a Fitts telescope. And this was a New York maker, died. All of his information went with him because he kept it all secret.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have two of the rarest Henry Fitts telescopes that are in existence out of the 50 or 60 that are known to exist, period.
Wow. Now, are those telescopes on display now or not?
The big Henry Fitts is. It's a 5.6-inch telescope, and the smaller one is not, but it will be part of this larger exhibit as part of the expansion.
Okay.
We do have a number of telescopes, though, on exhibit right now.
We do. We have about 18 telescopes, including amazing Zeiss instruments from Germany, one that is a 1 in 5 in the world, just some of the really early advances in astronomy, instruments that have special lenses that were really kind of major changes in how telescopes were made. So beautiful exhibit, beautiful instruments.
Wow. That is totally fascinating.
Yeah,
it is. It is. And these are things, if you looked at it, you probably wouldn't even pay it mind when you first hear about it. You just go, okay.
But the more you learn, the more you're drawn in.
Right.
And fascinated by it. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that expansion, we expect to break ground this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And then it looks like we'll open in the fall of 2013. And so keep your ears open for that, because that is going to be a big day and a lot of celebration, because this idea was hatched in the late 1990s. So it's taken a long time to get here.
Wow. Well, that is phenomenal. Now, you were talking a little bit, Tut, about being a member, your membership,
yes,
and the advantages to it. We've only got a few minutes left, so
okay,
Let's talk a little bit about that, see if we can get some Greenwood people interested in the museum.
Everybody should, because it's the state's treasure house. It's the state's museum. We want everybody to feel ownership in it. It's not just in Columbia or just for the Midlands, because we have artifacts from every single county in this state, and we represent the whole state. And membership is really a great deal, because you get so many wonderful benefits. You get free general admission for a year. You get 10% off in our wonderful gift shop, the Cotton Mill Exchange, and in our cafe, the Crescent Cafe. You get 4 times a year our full-color magazine images. You get discounts on different programs for kids or whatever. You get invitations to certain exhibit openings and things like this. So there's a lot of things. But really, the main reason anybody should join the Friends of the State Museum is because you are supporting the preservation of your heritage and your history and your culture. And as I said before, it's one of the richest in the United States. And so that's why you should really do it. But you get all these neat benefits and more than I've described here, too. Free
How
passes
much does it
friends.
Cost?
I think a dual membership for just a couple is like $35 a year. A family grandparent membership is $70 a year, and there are upper levels too,
sure.
You know, $250,000 corporate memberships and that kind of thing.
These are some of the most affordable memberships of any institution.
Absolutely, and you get so much for it. But
and not only that, the thing that I was interested in looking is that one can actually rent out parts of the museum. You have a great rental program. I was looking at the rates, and I thought, well, that's pretty affordable if you were in that area looking to do something.
Exactly, and birthday parties. You get discounts on birthday parties for children and that kind of thing. So there's so many reasons to, and like you say, for parties, for adults or for receptions, wedding receptions and all, we do rent our facilities too, and it's certainly
business
a
meeting.
Very unique background. So it's a great place for so many reasons. It's a gathering spot for the whole state, really, and it's the crossroads. Of course, Columbia's right in the middle of the state, and we're right by the Gervais Street Bridge in downtown Columbia, so the Columbia Canal and the Congaree River flow right by us.
So this would be a great place to come. Now, what exactly is the exact address?
301 Gervais Street. And if you're at the State House in Columbia on Gervais Street, you just head straight down the hill west. And as you're about to go over the bridge into West Columbia to cross the river, we're the last thing on the right. There is also a children's museum that is in our parking lot. And so there are actually three museums there, because I think I mentioned earlier the Confederate Relic Room and Military Museum, a very small museum. Is also in our building. So there are three museums right there at the same spot.
So you could come and spend, you really need more than a day.
Absolutely.
I really need more than a day.
Well, definitely
but hey, you know, if you're looking at staying close to home this summer, if you're looking for some spring break, some good places to go to take the kids, I can't think of a better place to go, Tom.
Oh, yes, that's right. Because we do have things for kids as well.
So
hands-on
right, great
stuff,
summer
a lot
camps.
Of things. Yeah,
summer great
camps,
summer camps,
summer
too.
Summer programs, that's right.
Absolutely.
And the Stringer Discovery Center, where small children and their families can go in and the kids can get their hands on everything in there and explore and discover and that kind of thing. It's wonderful. People really just enjoy it.
Well, it has been great to have you here. Let's just tell them one more time. The Body World exhibit is going to be here, what, Tom, till when?
April 15th.
That's tax day. Well, no, it's the 17th now. But
so you can come to the museum on the 15th and then pay your taxes on the 17th.
The OR is right next door.
See, a reason to keep living, folks. Hey, this is WLMA right here in Greenwood. It has been great to have both of you here. Thanks so much for
it's
coming today.
Thank you,
Anne.
All right, this is WLMA right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.